Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat Cold Tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
Today's cool fact of the day is that the next time you're swimming and in a swimming pool and you have to go pee, you shouldn't. A new study just found that when uric acid, which is present in your urine, especially if you eat a lot of fructose, and chlorine, which is there in the swimming pool, when they come together, you get trichloramine and cyanogen chloride. That combination, when you breathe it, is linked to lung, heart, and nervous system disorders. And the USA Swimmers Organization says 1 in 5 people admit to peeing in pools and that it's a common practice for competitive swimmers.
Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of 6 different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
It's my pleasure to introduce today's guest, William J. Walsh, a PhD who runs Walsh Research Institute. He's got a new book, a really interesting one, called Nutrient Power, Heal Your Biochemistry and Heal Your Brain. And Dr. Walsh here is pretty darn experienced. He's an internationally recognized experience in nutritional medicine, and he's looked a lot at nutrient-based psychiatry and nutritional medicine. The reason that I wanted Dr. Walsh on the show today was because the connection between food and your brain is so terribly important, and it's oftentimes missing from some of our paleo discussions or just general nutrition out there. It doesn't really look at the food-brain connection. And the Bulletproof Diet is all about willpower and focus and making the brain work really well, which results in the body working better. Let's see, other big highlights about Dr. Walsh's background: PhD in chemical engineering, and he's looked at chemical analysis of more than 25 serial killers and mass murderers, which is phenomenal. When someone's so broken, what happened in their brain is such a great way of looking at hacking people to perform better. He's also done nutrition for Olympic athletes, NBA players, MLB players, heavyweight boxing champs. So basically, if anyone out there deserves the title of biohacker, it's definitely Dr. Walsh. Dr. Walsh, welcome to the show. Thank you for being on today.
Well, hi, David. It's my pleasure.
Now, You were trained in nuclear science and engineering, and now you're looking at brain chemistry and human behavior. What's the connection?
Well, actually, now for the last 30 years, I've been engineering the chemistry of people rather than of things. But about 35 years ago, I was a prison volunteer in the Chicago area. In fact, I founded a group, helped trying to do what we could to help ex-convicts make it in society. And even won they gave me an award as Prison Volunteer of the Year for Metropolitan Chicago. So we were really active. But along that way, we learned that if we really wanted to help somebody, it was to do it at the time when they were getting out of prison. So I started an ex-offender program and got to know the families of people that had produced a violent criminal. And I knew several people who were on death row. Most of the people there at Stateville Penitentiary, where I was doing most of this, had murdered. So these are a pretty tough bunch of people. And that's when my education began. And I began to ask the question, why are people violent? What's the cause of a severe behavior disorder? And the families were telling me, most of them were saying, they knew there was something wrong with this child before he was 2 years old. They were oppositional. They were defiant. They had tantrums. They were harming animals, setting fires, and they were horrifying their families. And we had always thought and been told that people are violent because of their life experiences and because of their upbringing. So that's what started it. And since I was working at a national laboratory, 4,500 researchers, my group and I started spending a lot of time in the library studying everything we could about psychiatry, mental health, depression, schizophrenia, and that's how we started.
Which national laboratory was that?
Argonne National Laboratory.
Argonne.
Majors, yeah.
So my grandparents met on the Manhattan Project at Los Alamos National Labs, and my family, my father and mother worked at Sandia National Laboratory. So the national labs are these crazy collections of people working on really big problems that take long periods of time that they usually aren't allowed to talk about. It's interesting you're connected to one of the other big labs out there. Okay.
Well, I spent my honeymoon at Los Alamos as a visiting scientist, and I was doing plutonium experiments that worked out really well.
You might have known Larry Asprey then. He's the guy who figured out how to isolate americium, actually.
Yeah. Americium experiments, yeah. Back in a long time ago.
What a small world. That's phenomenal.
And I've been to St. Pia several times too.
I so admire that you made the career transition because it's a non-obvious one, but also that you were spending time with people in prison, because when I look at what's going on nutritionally in prisons and also like psychologically and from a neurofeedback perspective, it just breaks my heart, because I don't fundamentally believe that most people are evil. But their brains are just not working. And if your human part of your brain isn't working very well, your self-regulation's gone. And then you end up doing these horrible things. And it, frankly, a lot of what's going on there is automated rules. It's not even you really doing it. So to hear that so long ago, you started looking at these people and examining them, I'm awed to know that you've done the work. And I want to know more about what you discovered. So what did you find in the brains of these people?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I agree with you completely. I don't believe people are evil. And I've got to know several people who were on death row. And I think basically they've done some horrible things, but they're not intrinsically evil. What we did is when we were studying in the library, especially at a biology and medicine library that they had that had all this up-to-date science, what we learned and delving into the recent science and psychiatry, we learned that there was a revolution going on in mental health around the world. And it was a transition from sort of the Freudian approach, where they believed that kids were born with a blank slate and that their whole personality and their behavior was caused really by how they were treated and how they were nurtured. And right around 1965 and 1970 and 75, that's when the revolution occurred. And they did a lot of classic experiments where they learned that the number one factor associated with bad behavior or with schizophrenia or with depression was not environmental factors, but was whether they had a family history of the same thing. And there were a number of classic identical twin studies and fraternal twin studies. And then the whole world of psychiatry suddenly realized it had to do with chemical imbalances and neurotransmitters and the molecular biology of the brain. And so we began to ask, could it be that the people we were working with, the violent criminals, might have had something like that wrong with them? And so we started doing experiments. I had all these ex-convicts and people in prison willing to give me samples. And we did a scouting, basically a scouting expedition, trying to see if they were different biochemically. And I had people who were volunteering to work weekends and evenings, and it was wonderful. And we didn't have the government telling us how to do the experiments. We could do these classic double-blind controlled studies with no one telling us what to do and no schedules. Yeah, for about a year, we had a lot of data, and we didn't get anything that really made sense. It was like shooting a shotgun at the wall, and we had no data that correlated until the day I met the great Carl Pfeiffer, who was probably the world's premier nutritional scientist back in the 1970s and 80s. And I got a chance to meet with him for an hour, and he at Argonne National Laboratory, and he said he thought we were doing important work. He encouraged us to continue. And then he told me that the very first data he got that was really important and useful and correlated was trace metals like copper, zinc. There's about 25 or 30 trace metals, and so he encouraged me to look at the metals, and we did, of course, and that's when everything began. We found that these violent criminals and ex-convicts had very strange levels of trace metals. And then we began to study, well, why are metals important? And we realized that there are a few metals that have a dramatic impact on brain function. For example, copper is a key in the transition of dopamine to norepinephrine. All of your norepinephrine comes from dopamine, and you have to have the right amount of copper, or else those neurotransmitters will be at very odd levels.
It's really funny because on the top 10 list of bulletproof recommended nutrients, you'll find copper. And I actually didn't know the conversion there that you were talking about. So that was validating and lucky.
So. Well, copper is essential for everyone. Yeah. What's really important is that the body has this wonderful capability of balancing and normalizing copper homeostatically. Well, so it's important to get enough copper in your system. However, you need to have the ability to get rid of excess copper.
Yeah.
Some people don't have that. And a lot of the violent people that we had, that we studied had extremely high levels of copper. And so the people with episodic violence, the people who would have meltdowns and do terrible things, they were the high copper people. But the sociopaths, the antisocial personality disorders, the serial killer types, they were low in copper. So copper was a significant early beginning. And then we learned about pyrrole disorders, and we learned about methylation disorders. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people had problems with hypoglycemia, and others had clear problems with malabsorption. And so we began to delve into that, and the rest is history. That all started about 35 years ago. And after I started getting data and doing double blind studies, he once invited me to his annual symposium. He had an annual international symposium, and it was kind of a daunting thing because he had me speaking fourth in the morning. The first speaker was Roger Williams, who started all of this. The guy, he was the one who discovered folic acid, and he started the whole concept of biochemical individuality. And Abram Hoffer was the second speaker. Carl Pfeiffer was the third speaker. And I was the last speaker before lunch. I thought everybody's going to go home or go to lunch. And but no, they all stayed. And anyway, from that time on, Carl Pfeiffer and I, we started a collaboration. And he said, bring me some of these criminals. I'd like to run them through my lab and do the complete biochemical testing. So I started, I formed a public charity, not-for-profit, got some funding. And the first trip, I took five ex-convicts, all of them with what we thought was a sociopathic kind of chemistry. And they had done some terrible things. And the six of us went out to Princeton and had a rather interesting couple days. We stayed in adjoining rooms of this Holiday Inn in Princeton, three on one side and three on the other. And I shared a bed with a guy who, when he took his shirt off, had bullet marks right down his chest.
Wow.
And one of the guys was a guy who killed people for hire, and
wow.
So it was a pretty interesting group. It was a pretty interesting day, by the way. And at around 11 o'clock, I told them it's time to go to bed, and they wanted to start a poker game. I think what they really wanted was to take all their money. And I thought I'd exercise leadership. So I told them, we have to get up early in the morning and to get to the Pfeiffer's clinic. And so I'm going to go to bed. I don't know about you guys. I'm going to go to bed. So they said, okay, Dr. Walsh, we'll go next door in the other room and you can just go to bed. So I went to bed. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, I heard this noise. I heard shouting and yelling and stomping of feet around 3 o'clock in the morning. And I woke up and I went over to look next door, the room next door, and they were watching a movie called White Heat, starring James Cagney. And what was happening is every time a policeman got shot, they were cheering. I was appalled. So I went in and I said, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. We have to get up at 7 a.m. to get to the clinic. And they said, oh, no problem. We'll be fine. So the next morning I woke up and I had to wake all these guys up. And I thought, well, this could be kind of exciting, but it was fine. And I found out they're like that every night. Sociopaths sleep very little. Anyway, we got them to the clinic. They went through all the testing, and Pfeiffer spent the whole day with these five criminals. And when it was over, he called me in and he said, Bill, he said, this is exciting. He says, they're all the same. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, they all have severe pyrrole disorder. They're all zinc deficient. They're all dramatically zinc deficient. He said, they're all under-methylated.
Yeah.
Under-methylated. They have high blood histamine. And he rattled off five or six factors of chemistry. He said, they're all the same. He said, this is really quite exciting. And I was excited because I thought, this sounds like a pretty neat correlation biochemically that deserves a lot of investigation. So I got up to leave, and he said, wait, you can't leave. He says, you need these. And he handed me five pieces of paper. And he said, these are their treatment programs. He says, every one of these imbalances can be corrected without drugs, with nutrient therapy. He says, they ought to do this. He gave me some prescription of nutrients. He said, they ought to do this. They'll feel better. Those were his exact words.
Yeah.
So that was how we started with treatment. And then over the next 12 years, I collaborated with Pfeiffer, and we eventually did 500 people, starting with violent ex-offenders, but then starting to work with kids, violent children who had the same chemistries. And what we learned was that our outcome study showed the kids got better, but the adult criminals would get better for a while, and then they would stop compliance. And so we never succeeded in turning our violent criminals into pussycats, but it worked beautifully for kids. So by 1985, we started focusing totally on children, because we were getting what seemed to be enduring benefits with these very violent kids. About 1987, every time I saw Pfeiffer, he would say, Bill, what's needed is a outpatient clinic in the Midwest working with behavior kids. And after a while, I realized he meant me. So we founded a clinic, which we called the Pfeiffer Treatment Center. I named it after the great man because he died just before we opened the clinic. He was going to actually help us design treatments for the first 6 months of patients, but he died just before we opened. So we called it the Pfeiffer Treatment Center. And along the way, we started with ADD and with behavior disorders, focusing mostly on children. And then as time went on, we got into other areas. One of the children that came in happened to be autistic. Well, I wondered, well, how did he get into our clinic? We are not an autism clinic. Well, it turns out we did his chemistry. We found severe imbalances.
Yeah.
Got him corrected, and the kid got dramatically better, according to the family. Well, since that time, we eventually saw 6,500 kids diagnosed with autism spectrum disorders. I think I've seen more autistics than anybody in the world, and I know I've got the world's biggest chemistry database. I've always kept all the data. And we have the world's biggest chemistry database for behavior. We have more than 2.5 million lab results for behavior. And behavior disorders come in different types. And autism, same thing. They're all under-methylated, but they have a variety of problems that are treatable, especially if you get them young. Then we got into depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and then most recently, Alzheimer's. And our work is very scientific, and I have all this huge amount of data. And last month was kind of exciting for our group. I got invited to the annual meeting of the American Psychiatric Association.
That's very prestigious, yeah.
17,000 psychiatrists from all over the world by the way, it's kind of an unusual group, as you can imagine, all these psychiatrists in one building. But they're pretty dedicated, wonderful people, really. And the talk I gave is on depression, because according to my database, the world of psychiatry has a misconception about depression. They believe that throughout the world, psychiatrists believe that if a person has clinical depression, their problem is that it's a single disorder, basically, and it involves low activity of serotonin and serotonin receptors. My data shows that there are, with all my wealth of data, including symptoms and traits and all this medical history stuff, what we learned is that there are at least 5 completely different conditions called depression, and only 2 of them involve serotonin.
Wow.
And so I presented this at APA, and I had a large crowd, and there were 4 of us on an elevated stage. And when we had all given our talks, I was the 3rd out of the 4. The moderator said, well, the speakers have all agreed to stick around a while. And if anybody has additional questions, you're invited to come up and talk to the speakers. Well, about 15 or 20 psychiatrists rushed up, and they all came to me, which is kind of embarrassing. There wasn't a single one that wanted to ask the other speakers, who I thought were pretty terrific. I had mentioned that we have a physician training program. I've got a team of experts that travels around the world training doctors in advanced nutrient therapy for these conditions: behavior, ADHD, autism, schizophrenia, depression, anxiety. And a number of them just said, I've got to learn how to do this. And what I had showed them is I showed them how nutrients have power, which is the name of my book, Nutrient Power. I selected that name because I think the biggest barrier to this has been that most psychiatrists and most people in society don't realize how powerful nutrients can be if you find out what's gone wrong. And the beauty of it for us, a really lucky thing, is that out of the 300 or more nutrients that are really important in the body, there's only a handful that are strikingly important in the brain. And so we don't need to test all 300 nutrients. There's really only about 6 or 7 that dominate mental function. And the testing for a really nice battery of lab tests of blood and urine, it only costs about $300 or $400.
But what are the nutrients, the 6 most important ones?
What we find are, let's say, methylation disorders. People who are under-methylated or over-methylated. Under-methylated depressives, that's about 38% of all people in our huge database. This was all based on 2,800 depressives with all their lab results and everything. They're under-methylated. They have, and their problem is actually low serotonin activity and low serotonin levels. And they're the people who actually do quite well on SSRI antidepressants. They tend to be people with a strong will. They're self-motivated. Many of them become great athletes or CEOs or people like you, David. And they tend to have high accomplishment. However, about 1 out of 4 of them, 1 out of 4 of the depressive and of the under-methylated people tend to run into trouble. That's usually depression, anxiety, OCD, and that sort of thing.
That pretty much describes me. I'm not really depressed, but I've had all of those things before I got my biology in order. Yeah.
I'm the same. Pfeiffer found that in me. That first group of criminals, he made me go through all of his testing and told me I was under-methylated. And my wife was, he got to meet my wife and he told her, make sure he takes these vitamins. And I do. And for me, what it did is it took away migraine headaches that I used to have and no longer have. And it took away my seasonal allergies. I used to have ragweed every August. That was horrible. And it's been gone for 30 years. The people, the depressives who are under-methylated, most of them are under-methylated because of MTHFR or other SNIPs. SNPs,
yep.
which are really genetic mutations or abnormalities that weaken weaken these chemicals and functioning, like the enzymes, like the MTHFR enzyme. However, if a person has depression and is under-methylated, you cannot give them methylfolate because of epigenetics.
Because
if you do that, yes, you will improve their methylation, but the patient will get worse. And the reason is that and we haven't come to the, we haven't talked about epigenetics yet, but there are a small number of nutrients that have a tremendous effect on epigenetics and therefore on brain function. And folates are among them. And methyl and folate have opposite effects epigenetically. SAMe or methionine are serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Folates are serotonin reuptake promoters. So they make these people worse. Because low serotonin depression has a lot to do with reuptake. And now, because of epigenetic science, we have the ability to do the same thing that drugs do without side effects and with more scientific precision. We can aim it at the right people. Then there are people who are over-methylated. They do terrible on SSRIs. They're the people who and we've had hundreds and hundreds of them, and so many of them said they've tried Prozac, Paxil, and Zoloft, and Cerazone. They go down the list, and they say every time their anxiety got worse, their depression got worse. And I think when I was at the APA, I mentioned in describing this group, I mentioned that a simple blood test can identify who would be intolerant to these. And I mentioned that this may be one of the major causes of school shootings.
Interesting.
Because if we've done a study, as have others, there's been about 50 school shootings since 1990. In about 25 years, there have been 50 major school shootings where young people, students, have gone and shot other kids or teachers. More than 40 of them involve kids who were okay until they were about 14 or 15 years old. That's completely different from the violent people we studied. And I studied 10,000 violent children and adults. And most of those kids were in trouble by the time they were 3 or 4 years old. These school shooters are different. They were okay. Most of them were pretty good students until they got to be about 14 or 15 or 16 and developed anxiety and depression, got put on an SSRI, and then disaster happened soon afterwards. And I think that and I'm not the only one. There's a lot of people who know nutritional science who are beginning to believe that school shootings, many of them, or most of them, might have to do with exactly that, with a side effect, a very nasty side effect of SSRIs. And these antidepressants, if anyone gets one from a pharmacy, it has a little insert, and they warn about the fact that this can cause, that one of the side effects is suicidal ideation in teenage boys and young men. And I think that to stop school shootings, what I proposed to them, I said, what I think you psychiatrists should do is we're not going to solve the problem by getting rid of the guns, because there's 300 million guns in society. That won't happen, certainly won't happen soon, if ever. And then trying to identify mentally ill people who should not have guns, that would take forever. Yeah. But the way that they could stop it fast is to do blood tests before they give the SSRI.
What's the blood test that you're referring to?
Well, it's a combination of a blood test and medical history information. You need, because there's a syndrome associated with this undermethylation. And a key blood test, we can't use 23andMe or genetic testing, because that is not a reliable way to determine methyl status. And the reason is that the SNPs, the MTHFR and those SNPs that tend to weaken methylation, there are also SNPs that can enhance methylation. So you get about 3 undermethylated people for every 1 overmethylated people, and you can't tell from the genetic studies, because you need to look at all the SNPs. It actually is a tug of war between the SNPs that tend, the MTHFR and others, are tending to lower methylation, and those that are tending to raise methylation.
That is the best explanation of that I've ever heard in terms of why it matters. I've defaulted to 23andMe when there's a set of, you know, behaviors or set of inflammatory markers usually that aren't explained by diet. Someone's being compliant with a diet. Like, okay, well, it's something else. And you look at the SNPs and you can predict it. But you're actually looking for blood tests that show actual status versus what the genes would predict. And that's really important, even if, you know, you're listening to this driving in your car, you're going, well, this is kind of getting a little bit geeky. But the point is, the right nutrients can be the difference between you feeling cranky and anxious and angry and pissed off and being mean to your kids and all that, or just feeling like yourself all the time. If you're anyone with anywhere on that spectrum and you don't like how your brain works all the time, this isn't expensive testing. How much is a blood test? You said $300-$400?
For the whole battery of tests, and this particular test, I think we get for $60. But it's also, you need to, it'd be nice if you can, verify it with symptoms, and if they have strong will, obsessive compulsive tendencies, 75% of them have seasonal allergies, inhalant allergies. They usually do not have food or chemical sensitivities. We know the symptoms because we've studied thousands of undermethylated people, and we can predict the lab results actually if you do a careful medical history. So, but the labs themselves are inexpensive, and I think psychiatrists ought to do that, especially with young men. At Columbine, the two young men who shot the kids at Columbine, one of them had recently gone on Zoloft, I believe the other on Paxil, and they got dramatically worse, according to the parents, and then became homicidal and suicidal. And that's happened over and over and over, dozens of times. And right now, they're now preventing that knowledge from coming out. The last several school shootings, for example, the one in Connecticut, which was horrible, the young man who had shot the teachers and all those kids, it's now been publicly released that he was on a psychiatric medication, and they refused to identify it. And I'll bet anything is an SSRI, just like all the other cases. So I think there's a quick answer to school shootings, at least I got a chance to tell this to a lot of psychiatrists, and my talk was taped, and a lot of the psychiatrists sign up, and so they can watch all the talks and not just a couple of them. So there are five types of depression. We find that there are three major types of schizophrenia, each requiring different forms of treatment, completely different treatment approaches, different neurotransmitter abnormalities. And I think there's a lot we don't know, but it's really epigenetics that has really pushed this forward so we can have truly effective therapies for most of these people. Right. And the reason is, until now, we've known a lot about diet, how to get good nutrients and quality nutrients into people. We've learned how to adjust chemicals that are in the body and made in the body. But what's been missing are the enzymes, the genetically expressed enzymes that might be performing wrong, because these genes might be misbehaving and giving you too much or too little of a particular enzyme. Now with nutrient therapy, natural therapy, we can fix this. And I think we're on the verge of a new era in psychiatry. We had the Freudian era that lasted until 1965. Then there was the biochemical revolution in psychiatry from 1965 until the present. And I think we're right on the edge of a new era where we'll be able to fix all these psychiatric problems without foreign molecules. We'll be able to normalize the brain, and we can do it naturally without drugs. And that's the era that's beginning. It's just beginning. But I think in 50 years, we're going to be there. And my group is trying to do everything we can to speed that up.
Are you hopeful that this is going to take root? Because right now, if you say taking this methyl donor, which is just a natural amino acid, let's say, if you say that cures depression in this one of, you've made a drug claim for something, and the drug companies will then either take your license or prevent you from selling the nutrient, or they will then classify something that's in every piece of meat you eat as a drug and then restrict it and charge a lot of money for it. Like, how are we going to get around that problem?
Well, we have learned a way to get around it. And what we do is we have to be very careful to say we don't treat depression. We don't treat anxiety. We don't treat violent behavior. We treat chemical imbalances. We study people, and if we find zinc deficiency, we fix it. We normalize it. If we find a methylation disorder, we fix it. If somebody has pyrroles with a B6 and zinc extraordinary deficiencies, we normalize them. And so we don't claim, but what we do show is outcome studies. We show the outcomes of what is reported. We don't claim that any one person ever got better. But we have studies that we published in peer-reviewed journals that show that when you study hundreds of people, like once I think we did 700 violent children and adults, published what happened to their violent behavior episodes. And 91% of the families said that they were less. And more than, I think it was 57% or 58% said it, their violence had completely disappeared. We don't claim anything, and we don't say it works, because that would get us in trouble. But what we can show is what happens to the patient, what the patients and what their doctors report. And we might do something like Hamilton D scales or Beck scales that are respected by psychiatry for depression, for example. We've done hundreds of these, and actually the numbers get better after we fix these other problems. And what we do is not really opposed. We're not opposed to drugs. Actually, psychiatric medications have helped millions of people.
Sure.
It was the best they had in 1965 and for the last 50 years. But now we're learning how to do things better without side effects, normalizing the brain instead of putting powerful foreign molecules into the brain. And that's the way that I'm sure societies and science will go. And as science advances, the need for psychiatric drugs will fade away.
That is a remarkable vision. Based not just on any one domain where you've spent your career and your life, but for people who want to perform better at whatever it is they're here to do, what are the three most important pieces of advice you have for them? So this isn't just about Nutrient Power, your book, or anything like that, but just your entire wisdom of your life.
Well, I think a person needs to have quality nutrition. In a way, in many ways, we are what we eat. So I think you need to do that. However, people are biochemically unique and individuals, and the best diet for one person is not the best diet for someone else. So I think diet is very important. I think physical fitness is really important. You need to keep your body active. And then third, I think you really need to keep your brain active. And those are the three, if you had a list, the top three, those would be the three that I would go for.
Thank you so much for both the work you've done to expose some pretty amazing things about nutrition, and also just some of the nonprofit things you've done around people in prison, around autistic kids. it's an impressive body of work.
And actually, if I could, yeah. my organization now is still a not for profit. We're a 501c3 public charity, and we're still doing research. We're still doing active research. I've got a really exciting autism research study we're about to do, and trying to prove decisively that autism is epigenetic. But our main activity is training doctors. We have a team now that travels around the world, places like Australia and Ireland and Norway, and recently in the USA. In October, we're going to have our next training program for doctors who want to learn how to do these kinds of therapies. It'll be in Oak Brook, Illinois in October, if any doctors are interested in that sort of thing.
So I will definitely post links in the show notes on bulletproof.com. But in the meantime, tell everyone people are driving their cars, people who have mobile phones, what's the URL for your book and what's the URL for your training program? How can they get a hold of you?
Well, they can get the book, of course, they can get it from Amazon, but they can also get it directly from our website, which is walshinstitute.org. And that has all the information, and a person can purchase the book directly from our website. If they would like. I think it costs $15 or something. We made it as cheap as we could. We're not interested in making money, but we do want to get the word out. And the name of the book is Nutrient Power. And that was carefully selected because that's the message. We want people to realize you don't necessarily need a drug to help a person with depression or anxiety or even autism. That nutrients have the power to do this if you know precisely what a person's deviation is in the nutrients they have, what their chemical imbalances are. If you can understand who a person is that has these problems, you can usually help them with nutrients. So,
thank you, William. It's been an honor and a pleasure. Have an awesome evening.
If you've been listening to this podcast and you're wondering where to start, why don't you just jump in with both feet? Check out the Bulletproof Total Upgrade Kit, which is available on upgradedself.com. Save a ton of money and feel what it's like to be bulletproof.
Hi, A Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.